Hello, my workday playdate peeps. It's Erin. Welcome back to another episode where we turn your work hours into something way more fun, fulfilling, and dare I say, meaningful. Okay, let's get real for a second. You will statistically spend around 90,000 hours of your life at work. I know that is a lot, 90,000 hours. And yet, so many of us feel disconnected, like we're just going through the motions, surviving the Zoom fatigue, dodging awkward small talk in the break room, or struggling to find people who really get us. But here's the thing, my peeps, connection is everything. It impacts how we lead, how we work, how we love our jobs or don't, and how we show up as human beings. And guess what? Science backs this up. Studies show that strong workplace relationships boost engagement, job satisfaction, and even overall health. People with close work friends are even 7 times more engaged in their jobs. 7 times, y'all. And that's why today's episode is about creating real connection in the place where we nearly spend a third of our lives. And to help us do that, y'all are not even ready. I have got Dr. Adam Dorsey in the house. First of all, I could have talked to Adam for probably like 4 hours, so I had to cut it at about 45 minutes. It's a longer episode today, but it is so worth it. And if you don't know Adam, here's the scoop. He's a licensed psychologist and executive coach in Silicon Valley, working with high achievers from CEOs to professional athletes, helping them get out of their heads and into meaningful connections. He's also the host of the award-winning podcast, Super Psyched, and the author of Super Psyched, Unleash the Power of the 4 Types of Connection and Live the Life You Love, which, by the way, is already a bestseller. Now, Adam's TED Talks, which we talk about, on men and emotions and friendship in adulthood have been game changers. And today we're diving into his research, his wisdom, and his real life strategies for making work and life feel way less lonely and way more fulfilling. So grab your coffee, your notepad, or just settle in for this workday playdate because we are about to get super psyched about connection. Now, let me just set this up for you with a little science. As you know, humans are wired for connection. We literally need it for survival. And Harvard's longest running study on happiness shows that strong relationships are the number one predictor of a fulfilling life. Yet, my peeps, we are in a loneliness epidemic, especially in the workplace. Studies show, again, that nearly 60% of employees feel disconnected at work, and remote hybrid work has made it even harder. Disconnection at work equals burnout, lower productivity, and higher turnover. But when we foster connection, we increase engagement, collaboration, and overall well-being. So to my leaders out there, my people managers, my high achievers, my Enneagram 3s, I'm talking about me too, and my I've got a million Slack messages, but no real connection peeps, you are not alone. You want more than just clocking it in and out. You want to feel seen, heard, and valued, and you want to create that same sense of belonging for others. Guess what? This episode is made for you. Let's get into today's Workday Playdate with Dr. Adam Dorsey. Okay, Dr. Enthusiasm Dorsey. We're going to get into that in just a minute. Welcome to the Workday Playdate podcast. I am truly just sitting here so excited because your vibes are so high, and I know our peeps, and that's what we call our audience, the peeps, are going to get down on this. So welcome to the show.
Erin, I'm stoked to be with you.
Okay, wait. Why was your nickname growing up Enthusiasm?
I had a penchant for getting excited about things. I just can't help it. I do. Like, if I'm eating something delicious, it's the greatest thing ever. If I'm hanging out and just having a great experience, it's the greatest experience ever. I can't help it. I remember in college, a fellow student said to me at the dining hall, you know, gosh, you're so easily impressed. And I said, I'm not so easily impressed. I just have a high threshold for appreciation. I couldn't believe that my 19-year-old self gave the like perfect answer, but that's actually true. And I want people, and part of the reason I even wrote this book, Super Psyched, about connection is when we are living in connection, we tend to be more with the thing. Have you ever eaten? I'm just going to ask you this, Erin, because I know if you and I were like in, you used to live in Chicago. Let's say we were doing a deep dish or something like that. And it was like the best thing we ever tried.
Yes.
And you ask, you know, you're tripping hard on how good it is. And you ask the person next to you, what do you think of the pizza? They're like, yeah, it's good. And it's like, wait, hang on a second.
Yeah.
We are at world class. I don't know if it's Giordano's.
Mine is Pequod's. Pequod's was my favorite.
Okay, so Pequod's. And by the way, I'm not trying to be divisive about pizza. I'm all about all types of pizza, whether it's New York, Detroit. I like it all. You know, the true Neapolitan, sure. I mean, I will go pizza all day as long as it's insane. But I'm just using that as a reference point. Like you and I have both been, I know it because you're so alive. And I imagine some people are just kind of like, huh, why is she so stoked? And maybe even making it seem like it's a source of shame, almost like you get shamed for being so stoked. And it's like, we're alive for like a blip in time, this dash date between our birth and our death date. Why not like actually live like a vital handshake rather than a limp handshake? Because a limp handshake, God. You and I both know, sucks.
Yeah. Nobody wants a limp fish hand. Nobody wants that, right? Okay. First of all, I got to tell you, you just like brought tears to my eyes because nobody has ever said to me, you're just so alive. Like that's the best compliment that I think I could have ever received. So thank you. I'm receiving that. I'm trying in 2025 to like own compliments. And that truly to me was the best compliment ever. And I hear you about people sometimes looking at your excitement, enthusiasm, and looking at it as shame almost, because you know what it is? I think it's a reflection on sometimes what people wish they could have. And for you to say, this is the best pizza I've ever had in my life, like you are truly tasting your food. And that's something we talk about on the improv stage, is taste your food. Savor the scene. Savor every minute that you're in that scene, savor every minute you're here on this earth. And I can just feel it radiating. You and I literally just met today. And I'm already like, Adam's my boy. Like, you're my boy. Like, we're doing this because you have such high vibes. And I know because that you are this enthusiastic, so many things just come naturally for you. I'm assuming. It is floating.
And I want to own it because that's why I wrote this book. I mean, the word connection, everybody talks about this nebulous term connection. And the reason I think that felt like such an important compliment, and it really was just a reflection, it wasn't even a compliment. It is not well defined. In fact, if you look through the DSM, which is our, you know, our Bible for diagnosis, virtually every psychopathology, psychological mental illness has a modicum of disconnection to it. I'll use the common varieties, depression. We are ruminating about the past, so we're not really with the present. Yeah, you as an improv person know how important it is to be present. And when we're anxious, we're tripping on the future. We're not really present. When we have trauma, we dissociate. When we have true, you know, serious mental illness like psychosis, we have a break from reality. What's so interesting is after, you know, 250 episodes and about 20,000 hours of doing psychotherapy, the word connection just keeps showing up. And yet, if you look it up in the dictionary, that's not what people are talking about when they say, I want connection in my life. They're talking about being alive. And so I came up with a definition with 10 other licensed professionals, a working definition for what people seem to be looking for. Even the American Psychological Association does not have a definition for connection, which blew my mind. It's like, how do we not have the opposite of so many of the things that ail us? So when I said you're vital, you're alive, I didn't say vital, but you know, I meant vitality and coming alive, life force. That's what we're looking for around connection.
Oh, dude. Okay. Normally I'm like, let's set an intention. The intention is connection. Okay. I'm just going to call it what it is because I'm like, that really, really stood out to me as just such a really awesome, you said, reflection. And to me, it was a compliment. I feel I'm so grateful. And I have been through the trauma that you mentioned. I have been through all of the disassociations possible, workaholism. I wouldn't call it alcoholism, but like close to it. Like I have definitely disassociated in my life. And just recently, I feel like I was kind of born again to find joy and see things as beautiful. So I am really, really grateful you said that. And I'm so excited for this conversation. Because, okay, this month on the show, we're talking about taking initiative and creative risks. And I think for a lot of people, when we talk about taking initiative and creative risks, it can mean a lot of different things. What does it mean to you in the sense of connection? How do you relate that back to connection?
Yeah, so we have these desires to take a chance. And taking a chance is a part of initiative. And the thing we know about deathbed studies, this is really morose, but it's so important to learn from those who are dying. We know that when people are dying, there are at least two main regrets, one of which is chances not taken, and the other is love left on the table. Now, oftentimes, we take a chance and we do a belly flop. We feel embarrassed, our self-talk, we get a shame shower. Brené Brown talks about shame showers. But if we aren't having some bits of like, oh God, did I really do that? We're probably not trying hard enough. I'm not suggesting that we have belly flops all the time, but Bill Hader, for example, on SNL, one of my favorite human beings who ever lived, just, I can't get enough of this guy. He would get so anxious, and Andy Samberg did an anxiety song on SNL. You have to take initiative on SNL. You have to take chances. And it's a really great, you know, formula for life. We regret not having talked to that person who seems so interesting. We regret not having asked that question that we really, really wanted to ask. We regret not having gone for that position, that job, trying that sport, trying that language, trying that musical instrument. And what it really requires is a Control-Alt-Delete on our head, overriding our basic system functions and saying, I'm going to do this in spite of the fact that there is some anxiety here. Feel the fear. I do it anyway. As long as it's not hurting anybody, as long as it's not reckless, as long as it's not hurting yourself. What happens, I believe, and this has been corroborated by some biologists, is that it's almost like we have within us, the cells of our body are the minions from Despicable Me. And they're either cheering for us or they're booing us. And when we take a chance, they tend to say, yay, good job, Aaron. You're trying something that's a little outside your comfort zone. Let you represent me. Versus the time that you're like, no, I'm not going to give it a shot. You know, and they're just like, boo, boo, Aaron. Well, it turns out, according to at least one biologist, I think his name is Bruce Lipton out of Stanford, the cells actually do listen to us. They tense up if we don't speak our truths. You might get back pain when you don't speak out, you know, when you're suppressing anger and not channeling it in a meaningful way. Recognizing the signal of anger means I need to express something. I obviously don't want to cause scorched earth, but maybe there's a gentle way I can articulate it. So vitality and being super psyched doesn't just mean being jacked and happy all the time. That's toxic positivity. That is not what my book is peddling. That's not what I, as a psychologist, would ever peddle. Turn that frown upside down, you know, like whatever that is. Like, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm saying being super connected to our psyches. Our psyches are informing us all the time with thoughts and feelings and autonomic behaviors all day long. Some estimate about 60,000 of these pulses a day, this thought, feeling, behavior cycle. And what I'm asking people to do is to actually be aware of what's going on while it's going on. Mm.
Oh my God. Okay. I got to unpack this. Adam, dude, I feel like you and I could like talk forever. I want to go the improv route. I want to go the mind body connection route. I want to go like the minions in my cells route. Like I want to go all of it. And I just, when you talked about taking risks and feeling fear, feel the fear and do it anyway. That's such a mantra that we have on the improv stage, first and foremost, because it is terrifying to go out there and make up something in front of an audience that you've never done before, right? And I know you've done improv. We got to talk about that too in just a minute. But that mind-body connection is so huge. And when I think about the people listening to this show, I just know so many of my peeps have had physical pain because they have repressed their emotions.
Exactly.
And I've had a whole series on this show about it because I literally, Dr. John Sarno, when the body is, so two books, Gabor Mate, When the Body Says No, and then Dr. John Sarno, Healing Back Pain, changed my life. And I truly changed my pain that I held in my body for 2 years with my thoughts and my mental ability and my therapy and my journaling practice. And changing my mindset changed the physical chemistry of my body. And because I didn't use drugs, I didn't use surgery, I'm able to tell that story sitting here today as a new person. That's when I told you I'm sort of born again. Like that's truly, that was the, I'm on the other side of what I was on. And, everything you say makes so much sense, and you back it by science, and you back it by your practice and the work that you're putting in this world. And without taking initiative, without taking creative risks, we will never know what we're capable of. And so I'm just, I could talk to you like for hours.
Well, yes, Andy, you for a sec?
Yes,
all right.
Please.
So first of all, somatization, we somaticize. My 20s, one of the hallmarks of it was I was depressed and I was highly anxious and I had undiagnosed ADHD of the inattentive type, and my back and my GI and all types of, I felt like an old man, and these things in my psyche were not being properly attended to. And I remember going to one of the doctors and he said, you know, are you experiencing an unusual stress in any of these areas of your life? And I was like, all of them. And he said, I have a feeling that when you get control of your reins, these symptoms will cease. And they did. The other thing that's really interesting is if you don't believe in that the body's trying to tell you something, I was working with a guy who had testicular pain. He had just been blindsided. His girlfriend had cheated on him with a dear friend of his. So he said to me, you know, after getting a medical workup, he had no idea what was going on with his body. And I said, do you feel like you've been kicked in the nuts? And he said, Oh my God, yes. And I said, well, the body may just be having a somatization of that experience. And he absolutely discounted it. But after 3 weeks of testicular pain that was not caused by medical causes, that was considered idiopathic is the medical term that's used when we can't really determine a medical cause. The next week he came in, he's like, dude, I don't know what happened, but I'm fine now. And I had a feeling that it was that he expressed it. It was named, it was tamed. I would love to take, by the way, credit for the title of a great book, but I can't. Susan Jeffers wrote a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. I often use that as a mantra. Embarrassingly, I've not read the book, but the title changed my life.
Yes.
So I just love that title, and I'm sure it's an outstanding book, but I wanted just to give credit where credit was due on that one. Improv, to your point, is all about just unlearning all of the things that we sadly learned after the age of around six when we started, you know, when we were in kindergarten, first grade, we would still sing in front of the class, and then something happens. Somebody makes fun of us. There's like a Nelson from The Simpsons who goes, ha, ha, you know, and you're like, oh God, I'm never going to do that again. I'm sorry. It wasn't a great Nelson impersonation, but you
get
the idea.
That was perfect.
And we don't want to be shamed. We have what's called an imaginary audience. There's an imaginary audience that follows us even when there's no one around. And it's a hallmark of adolescence. We become so self-conscious. And improv teaches us to unlearn what we had learned socially. And when we yes and, when we, you know, play in the sandbox with the improv skills, they play out in the real world. And people, you know, love to make fun of improv. Even BoJack Horseman made fun of it like hardcore. But anybody who does it knows it is one of the greatest paths to self-freedom and feeling like I'm emancipated from whatever it was that used to hold me back.
Oh my God. I always say that. You know, I always say my best form of therapy is on the improv stage, because you can create a character out of what you're going through and then work through it through that character. And I just, That's why I love it as a teaching tool, especially in the workplace, because we're tricking people kind of into having fun. And so through that play, the work happens, right? And that's workday play date. That's what we're here for, is to have fun and to learn through it. But I can see, there's so many angles I want to take with you, but I know that everybody tuned in because they want to know about connection. And I know your book, Super Psyched, is just going to give us all of that and more, but I want to talk about the types of connection in your book, because you talk about four types of connection.
That's right. That's right.
And I want to break those down really quick. Can we break down the four types?
Sure. And one of the reasons I wrote this book is because I believe in it so fully. I do believe that connection is the precursor to all the things we want. It's the precursor to happiness. It's even the precursor to grieving well. It's really aligning with the truth. When we do not align with the truth, if I was to tell you, you know, I wear size 9 shoes, and I wore size 9 shoes because I didn't want to offend the sales rep, I'd be walking around in pain all day. And yet, effectively, that's what many of us do. We say we're into some stuff that we're not into because we want to, you know, we do it for our friends. We pretend that we're into stuff that we're really not into, and we're not being authentic with ourselves. So what I wanted to do was invest my heartbeats, 18 months, 20 months of writing in this topic of connection and the four ways we connect. So if you can imagine an archery target with four circles, the center, the bullseye, is connection with self. It's not selfish. It's not narcissistic. It informs all of the other connections. If you and I are wearing really, really tight shoes, how well are we going to connect with other people? And yet so many of us go through life really, really in lots of pain. We could be anxious. We could be depressed. These things hold us back. I've experienced all of these things. And I call myself the hair club for men psychologist, because I don't just, you know, I'm not, you remember that ad. I'm not just the person over there. You know, I don't just treat these. I've experienced a great many of these. Outwards is connecting with others. Connecting with others could be connecting with our romantic partner, like my wife, could be my children, could be connecting with you. I actually include pets as others, because we now know that they aren't just things. I used to run pet loss groups at the Humane Society, did about 4 years of it. And I saw more tears in that context than any other place I have ever seen. The third tier is connecting with the world. Connecting with the world includes with our work, with art, with nature, with our ancestry. Dr. Maya Angelou once said, you don't know where you're going unless you know where you're from. And I've included that very intentionally, as ancestry is important, tradition, things like that. As long as they are aligned with who you are and aren't harming you, of course. This book is all about that, including, you know, I actually mentioned a whole piece on no guilty pleasure, as long as you're not hurting anybody. Don't even use the word guilty pleasure. It's just a pleasure.
Yeah.
As long as you're hurting nobody, let alone yourself. And the fourth is connecting with something greater. Now, for some of us, that means going to church and religion. Some of us, it means, if we're like Orthodox atheists, and here in Silicon Valley, I would say that's one of the top religions, would be Orthodox atheism. But even they, when they go to Joshua Tree, when they go to the Grand Canyon, they experience awe. And awe, we now know, is something greater. Something is happening in our brains. We become more pro-social. It's as if our brains have psilocybin in it, which is a psychoactive chemical for magic mushrooms, because we stop being so self-absorbed. We lose that sense of like, oh my gosh, I have an imaginary audience. Instead, people end up hugging each other. Have you ever had that vibe when you're on a hike and you know you're in an amazing place and strangers gives you a smile and there's a knowing? It's like, we are in something awesome at this moment. And you never see that person again. You've never seen them before. But that's a byproduct of awe. The solar eclipse in 2017 in Oregon, my colleague Jonah Peckett writes about how people, strangers, were hugging each other. Like, that's kind of great. And one of the things you're trying to do with improv, it relates to all of these four connections. And when we are connected to these four areas in our lives, our gas tanks feel fuller.
Oh my gosh. Adam, we need a 5-hour show. I want to talk to you for so long, because
I'm down.
First of all, I mean, this is insane. Everything that you just said makes complete sense to me. The bullseye, I just finished a book, Gabby Bernstein. I'm a very spiritual person, I would say. And she did a book called Self-Help, all about internal family systems and connecting back to self. And I am so deep in self-work right now. Like, it is like that connection, I think, stems, it creates all the other three connections, right? And I'm just sitting here, like, I'm sure every single person, and you did a great job, by the way, giving us a very visual picture of what we feel when we feel awe. And like, every person listening could probably imagine what they felt in those moments, whether you're in Joshua Tree on the top of a mountain in Austria, wherever you are, and you have experienced awe, what that feeling feels like, and that connection can fuel you, like you said. There's gas in that that gives you strength to keep going. Hey, Workday Playdate peeps. Quick pause because I have to tell you about one of our most loved workshops, Taking Initiative and Creative Risks. Now, let's be real. Growth happens when we step outside of our comfort zones. That's why we've created this high-energy interactive experience built on our golden formula. A safe space plus taking creative risks equals change. A seasoned improv professional will help your team embrace new ideas, take bold action, and communicate in this workshop like never before. Now, we tailor every experience to your needs. In an in-person workshop, we are rocking for 2 hours with up to 100 participants, and virtually it's 90 minutes of laughs and learning for up to 50 people. Are you ready to energize your team? Let's make it happen. Visit us at learntoimproveit.com. That's learntoimproveit.com. Or check the show notes to learn more. We cannot wait to hear from you. Let's get back to the show. I really want to talk about your connection formula, because you give us these four, and then you talk about connection formula. And I want to know what that is and how we can use it in our day-to-day, especially knowing we've got a lot of people leaders who listen to this show. So how can we bring that connection back, not only to ourselves, but to the people in our workplace?
So let's do two scenarios. Scenario A is there are a lot of things that keep us from connecting. I don't know about you, but this is a descriptor of me at times, and I think many listeners. Saturday rolls around. It's been a really, really intense week. You left it all in the field. You wake up, you pet the dog, start feeding, brewing up some coffee, look at the snail mail, open up the email, turn on Netflix, because there's that streaming thing that everybody's talking about. And you start streaming it. You're folding some laundry. You're responding to texts and checking out a little social media while doing all of these things at once. And then Monday rolls around and you say, where was my weekend? Mm. And that was like, I did everything but nothing.
Yep.
Versus an intentional weekend where you do the things that actually matter to you, the things that really bring you alive, seeing the people who matter, not being directed by FOMO, but actually being directed by actual intention and desire. In fact, the opposite of FOMO is JOMO, the joy of missing out. Patrick McGinnis, who wrote the exact definition of FOMO. He's the creator of the word. He wrote a book called FOMO Sapiens. He's been on my podcast, really interesting guy. But we are FOMO Sapiens. We are often directed by things that we don't want to do. And then we get in the car and I call it a drive away test. We drive away and we say, what the hell did I just do?
Yeah.
That was a total waste of my heartbeats. Like why? And sometimes that even happens with friends who, you know, who just talk and talk and don't listen and bring everything back to themselves, and you feel talked at. You get in the car and you drive away and you say, huh. Versus, of course, seeing a friend who, like you, where there's like beautiful back and forth and you feel seen and you feel understood and you feel taller as you drive away. And you just ask yourself, wow, can I see that person soon again? So it's called, I call it the driveway test. But each of us has a formula. Some of us don't want to see friends all that often. Some of us, according to Britt Frank, and I agree with her, she's a friend and a podcast guest and a great author. She said that some people, when it comes to friendship, are like hummingbirds. They see friends all the time. They feed all the time like hummingbirds. I actually have a hummingbird literally right now outside my door who's feeding. Versus a scorpion, not the evil aspects of a scorpion, but scorpions apparently eat like once a month. And so some people want to see friends less frequently, but each of us has a different need. And that is part of the connection formula. You and I have a lot of things in common. You and I would both be stoked to be on the improv class. And some people would be terrified and some people don't want to do it. And maybe they should, but that's a whole other story. But like my wife loves, you know, she loves improv dancing. You put me on an improv dance floor and I am going to nearly have a panic attack.
Yeah.
I don't want to, I'm good with my head, not so good with my body. Would love to. And that's something I've committed to working on. But for her, that's a connection. She loves things that are sometimes I don't love. And for us to feel connected, we need to ask ourselves, how can I accommodate the world of me and you and us together? Sometimes that means us doing something jointly, like going on a hike. We both are refreshed by that. But if I was to say, let's go watch the Golden State Warriors, she'd say, what? God, no. Like, I'm not using my precious weekend for that. She doesn't have any interest. So we all have different formulas. And the important thing is to know what the formula is. Many of us are not doing the things that we knew we used to love doing. Like, many of us let a musical instrument fall by the wayside. And what I am also asking in this book is bring back past loves and see if they give you life. That tends to be the lowest hanging fruit. We gave up on something that was truly awesome. So finding your formula, living by it, stretching the formula, trying things like mom always said, you know, try it, you might like it. Try new things, go to things that give you truly a vitality. Oftentimes those things are not as easy as just streaming Netflix. We like what's easy. And oftentimes there's a barrier to entry. Like I have to, oh gosh, to go biking, I have to pump up my tires. I need to grease my chain. I need to put the rack on the car. And then we need to drive someplace. There's so many barriers. And yet we know oftentimes moving our bodies and biking out in nature gives us such a massive packed punch of goodness. So oftentimes we have to go with what's a little bit harder. But what I'm hoping people do is find their connection formula, live more by it. They will be kinder and more generous with other people. They'll return to work on Monday with greater vitality. They're less likely to quiet quit, I believe, because they're vital. And they might even find new ways to job craft. That's a whole other topic unto itself. But Amy Resnewski at Yale School of Management found ways to take a look at our work and find ways to just make it more meaningful if we have to be there anyway. So that's a whole other topic, but I know that matters to you. So I'm just giving a plug for job crafting.
Okay. Well, next we'll do job crafting. We got to have you back on the show because I literally could talk to you forever. You know, it's timely. So I've been a dancer my entire life, but I stopped after 22. I went to Clemson. I was a dancer for the football basketball team. What? Competed nationally. Oh. Listen, and they do some alumni events and I'll go back and dance. And my family, my son has been able to see me dance, which is cool. But a girlfriend of mine here, a new friend actually, who I'm like, she's one of those friends that I'm going to drive away fulfilled, right? Like there's like a lot of fulfillment in that friendship. She asked me to go to a hip hop class tonight. And I'm kind of hoping she cancels, if I'm being honest, because I'm like, oh, I got to get ready. I got to go. But no, I know when I go, I am going to feel so much joy on the way home. It's the barrier to entry. And I feel like that connection formula brings me back to the first bullseye, which is myself, because I literally started dancing when I was 3 years old and I haven't, you know, kept it up. I'm in my 40s. Like I have not kept that up. And I think everything you just said, that connection, finding what fuels you, what, you know, I have a hummingbird friend. When you said hummingbird, oh my God, I was thinking of my girlfriend. I'm like, not the friend I'm seeing tonight, but she feeds, man. And she's always wanting to hang. And I'm like, you're a doctor. You have three kids. Like, how is this possible? I'm, you know, I do less than you and I'm tired, you know, and she just keeps humming. Everything you said makes so much sense. You put it in such a beautiful metaphor that I know everyone listening could find the connection back to themselves through that. So I could literally listen to you talk forever. Like, I'm just like, this is so good. Now, okay, I wanted to talk about your TED Talk because you have an awesome TED Talk on adult friendships. And I want to talk about that because adult friendships can definitely be hard to maintain. I'm steering us away from this for just a second, but I want to know, what are some of your top insights for creating adult friendships at work and then just in life? Because that to me was such a huge topic. And as I've changed, and just to fully full circle this for you, I'm a different version of me than I was in my 20s. So some of my friends in my 20s, I feel like it's a harder connection, right? So, and as I continue every decade, I hope I evolve. I hope there's different versions, right? So what do you say about people who are struggling even to maintain adult relationships and how we can foster those through your work?
So there's so many things that you've just thrown out, including that we do change and our, you know, sometimes the friends that we had in our 20s were so important. And it's not that the relationships weren't good. It's that they served a purpose and we've changed. And sometimes they last forever. Sometimes they last for a short period in our life. Sometimes they last for a very, very short period. But the hope is that we've helped each other in some meaningful way. I don't know if you've seen Wicked, but for the good, that song where they part, for the good, like, I'm better for having known you.
Yeah.
So that's one thing to really consider. A second thing is that the reason for friendship in adulthood is one of the reasons it's so critical. Esther Perel talks about the idea that we used to live in villages and now we expect that our spouse will play all of the roles of all of the villagers. And as I was saying earlier, like, my wife will not watch basketball. I don't want her to watch basketball with me. She would be sitting there just kind of like, okay, it wouldn't be fun. I'd rather either watch it alone or with my kids or with my friends. And there's so many things I want to do with her. She is fantastic. She is the greatest joy in my life. And, you know, there are certain things that she's into that I'm not into that she needs to make quota. So friends are absolutely essential. I hear about it all the time in my office. These super friendable, cool people say to me, you know, I've moved from Ohio as a child to East Coast for school and then graduate school in Texas. And now I'm here in Silicon Valley. In each place I've left friends behind with the clear intention and promise that we would stay in touch, except, yeah, life got in the way and we didn't. And they'll also say something like, who wants to see your friend, you know, by Zoom? And I would challenge that immediately, because you and I could have a great conversation via Zoom and it could feel very, very energizing. All right. So friends at work, first of all, oftentimes it can feel super vulnerable to say, hey, want to go hang out, want to go grab lunch, get coffee, let's go for a walk and talk. Because you might get rejected. It might go south. Or you might have that hang and you realize, oh my gosh, not who I thought they were. I'm going to have to be either rejecting or being rejected hurts. It hurts like physical pain. Brain imaging studies show that. So we are wired not to take chances, not to show initiative, not to engage in courage. Courage requires fear. You can't say that person's fearless and courageous, because to do something that is courageous means I felt the fear and did it anyway, to bring back that title of the book. And people don't want to do that at work as much. We also know that one of the greatest ways for a company to retain its employees is to create a friendly atmosphere. When you have a Jim and a Pam, I know they became romantic later, but when you have the friendships that can transpire at work, I have not seen the stats on this one. I know they retain their people longer, but I would imagine that you have greater workplace engagement. I would love to see the stats on that at some point. I would recommend that you realize that being lonely hurts more than being rejected. Being rejected hurts. I'm not going to trivialize it, but being lonely, we now know, is so toxic for us, and we need people to hang out with. We all have different feeding frequencies, and there are different types of friends. I like to think of friends as being different types of superheroes. There's people who you can talk sports with, but maybe they're not going to talk about the real emotional stuff. There are people who might help you with a project, but maybe they're not the people you would want to go to a musical event with. Each one has their strengths and limitations. Appreciating them for who they are and not expecting them to be something that they're not is so important. And best friend sometimes can seem a little bit intense, but you can have multiple best friends. You don't have to choose one who is your best friend. But definitely a little time with a friend goes a long way, often has a long half-life. And if you have friends who live out of state, do the Stevie Wonder thing. Just call to say, I love you. People say, they think they have to have a reason. Screw that.
Yeah.
Call because you want to talk to the person.
So
and
good.
Even just leave an amazing voicemail. I just befriended somebody up in Canada and we leave each other goofy, WhatsApp videos, showing each other, like various whiskeys that we're into at the moment. And we've never actually even met in person. So that's kind of fun. Different types of friendships and for different parts of you. To go back to the IFS, we all have different, many, many parts. And those parts, and we won't get into internal family systems too much, but need expression.
So dope, Adam. So dope. Because different parts of you have different energies, right? And so to have a friend who matches that energy on when you need it, when it feels right for you, I think is so important. And I love what you were talking about with your whiskey friend. That's and the video called Waffling Wednesday. I try to do that with my best friends that I've had since I was 13, actually. That's a friend group that will never die. That's like those, right?
Amazing.
And there's four of us total. And we try to send little videos every Wednesday just to like recap each other what we've got going on, because it does take connection and it does take intentional pursuit. But I do think you're right. The opposite of that is loneliness. And I think we all experience that. When you said loneliness, I was thinking about 2020 when we were all just trapped inside and we could not go anywhere but Zoom, and how that was really affecting a lot of people, especially people who live alone, their mental health. So just everything you say is so spot on. I could talk to you forever.
Thanks.
I really could. And I want to make sure, because I know a lot of our listeners here today, I wanted to go down the personal relationship route, but I think what you just said with friendships kind of covers those bases too. You can take what you just said and apply it to a personal relationship as well, like a romantic relationship. And I also think that people listening here today are going to walk away with that intention we set of connection. But if somebody isn't feeling connected, whether it's to any other person, to themselves, that bullseye that you mentioned, if they're listening and they're feeling that disconnection and they think, maybe I don't know where to start, what would you say is the very first step for them? What would you recommend?
Yeah. So what I'd recommend doing is think about the friends in your life who you've not been in touch with and who you might be willing to, perhaps awkwardly say, hey, I kind of dropped the ball many years ago, or doesn't matter who dropped the ball. I'd really want to just hang out with you, even virtually. So I would start with friends. I would start with bringing back to life the things that we let go that were awesome. The dancing. You were born to dance. You stopped dancing. And that's a part of you that needs expression. That's a part of you. To think that you danced at that level where Clemson football, you better be.
Like
you were probably quite on point because it's a very demanding context. And some people don't love the things that they're good at, but you don't have to be good at the things to love it. My father decided at 59 to learn Spanish. He has no, he doesn't care if I say this. He knows it and he thinks it's funny. He has no facility with languages, but he desperately wanted to learn to speak Spanish. And that was a part of him that he wanted to express. He does it. He's actually kind of an exemplar. He brought back playing piano after not playing it for over 70 years.
Wow.
And now he's, nearly 86 year old man playing the piano every day. Is he playing to become a concert pianist? No, he just likes doing it. It's a part of himself. So find something, either A, that you used to love and are stopped doing, or B, find someone who you know is awesome, who you've lost touch with. Those would be the two easiest things to do. One other thing I want to just drop by you. Many of us deny our mortality. Like, I'm not going to die. I know everybody else has in history, but not me. But it is later than we think. Over the summer, I saw my buddy Jed. Jed is the greatest guy. I read about him in the, one of my favorite human beings I've ever known. He has one major problem. He lives in New Jersey. I don't get to see him, but for every 9 years in person. And I realized over the summer that if I let this continue in at the rate it's going, I will see him 5 more times before I die. I don't want that. So I am committed to hanging with him on the phone, hanging with him on Zoom, getting some Jed time. People say, oh my God, I'm on Zoom all week. It's different, I promise, when you are with a friend than when you're in a business meeting and with your, you know, Zoom mullet. It's very different. So I highly recommend looking at the third place I would look, and I talk about it quite extensively in the book, is trying new things. Look at a list of things and ask yourself, what is on my bucket list? What is something I've always wanted to try? And I wanted to try winemaking. I wanted to try a bunch of things in this life. My son asked me before my last birthday, you know, what's something you've always wanted to do but haven't done yet? And it was a stupid thing, but it was a great thing. And I said, I want to go to what do they call those things where you're locked in the room? One of those
escape room. Yes.
And we did it. I'm horrible at these types of puzzles. You too. Okay. Yes, and the three of us were not good at it, but we made it out with seconds to spare. But the important thing wasn't so much the result. It was just doing something and seeing if it's for you. Oftentimes it's not, but oftentimes it is.
Adam, okay, you have encouraged me. I'm going to sign up for this hip-hop class tonight, even though I am not sure if my friend is going. She's like, there might be a chance I can't go due to kids stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm going to sign up. You know why? Because I deserve that. I deserve that joy and connection back to my true self. And I feel like everybody listening, if there was something that Adam brought up for you when he was talking, do that thing. Do that thing. That is your homework. That is the coolest. You've literally changed a life today, mine. And sometimes the show is for my peeps, and sometimes I do it for both of us. And today it was both. Okay. So today, this was really cool to talk to you. I felt like this conversation was so impactful. And I want to ask you this. We ask every listener, how are you going, or every guest, I should say, and listener, how are you going to make your workday more playful today?
That's a great question. One of the things I do is I try to have a walk-on song. MLB, Major League Baseball, when players are playing at home, each player has a walk-on song. If you go to Major League Baseball, you'll see it. And the songs are very different. You know, sometimes it's hip-hop, sometimes it's country western, sometimes it's old rock and roll. You never know. But whatever brings them alive. One of the ways I'm going to come alive is in play today is I am going to bust out. There is a great song by George Michael. It's Freedom 90. It's the second Freedom. It's the one where it's on Listen Without Prejudice. But that's one of my walk-on songs. And Freedom it just 90. Gets me in. Freedom 90 just gets me into a vibe. Let's see if I can even.
I'm pulling it up for you right now. Yeah, Freedom 90, right here.
There we go. Right? Are you feeling it?
I'm feeling it. Okay, we're going to get a little playful with this here. Okay, go, Adam. Okay. this is so good. This remastered? And this is the remastered version, right?
It absolutely is. And
God.
That is one of my one of my walk-on songs. Also, Lil Nas X, Industry Baby. There's certain songs that just cause me to come alive and bring out my playfulness. One other thing I'm probably going to do. I will watch a video, a 5-minute video, probably of Norm Macdonald telling a dumb joke, because the laughter that I get watching Conan and Norm, I've watched the moth joke, I don't know, 100 times. It will never get old. Or watching the cowbell sketch. These are go-tos. If I will never get tired of these.
Go-tos. You know, my favorite one is, Kristen Wiig and, Fred Armisen.
Bill Hader?
Fred Armisen. When they're on Weekend Update and they have on the vests and they're Kat and Garth and they're like telling, they're improvising the whole time and then they break, and it's the best. If you can, it's so good. That's like literally, if I'm in a bad mood, I'll do that. Or like Schitt's Creek bloopers. Those are also a highlight for me. Okay. Adam, this has been incredible. Oh, everyone is going to want to find you. Everyone's going to hire you. Where can they find you? Where can they get your book? Tell them where to go to find you on the internet. Go run, everyone. Run.
Oh, thanks. Well, my name is Adam Dorsay, which is A-Y, D-O-R-S-A-Y. So if you Google me, you'll find me all over the place. But it's Dr. Adam Dorsay, D-R-A-D-A-M-D-O-R-S-A-Y.com. My book's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. My podcast is everywhere. And my TEDx talks are on YouTube. But hit me up. I'd love to hear from you. I'm on LinkedIn, obviously. For those of you who want to have some form of a collegial relationship.
Oh, my God. All right. Everybody grab the book. Go follow him immediately. I'm so glad we had you on the show. Thank you so much. This is not the last you're hearing from me, my friend.
Awesome. I'm stoked, Erin. And you know what? I'm going to leave one last nugget. Just, you know, kind of the Steve Jobs. Well, one more thing. If you're afraid, here are some thoughts from great thought leaders. Failure is merely data, according to Dory Clark. It's just data. Mm-hmm. Data didn't work. Kind of like that, you know, light bulb thing. According to Matt Abrahams, mistakes are merely missed takes. Mm-hmm. Bonnie Brunel, my colleague, says failure is tuition. I love that idea.
Love that. Tuition.
And last but not least, our boy, Sean Hayes, probably also from Second City, for all I know, one of the greatest minds in comedy, says, and I'm going to say it poorly, our failures end up making the best stories.
Yes, he's so true. And do you know that the title of this show, we've changed it now 3 times. The beginning title of this podcast was Failed It, the Failed It podcast. So I'm so here for that. I'm so grateful that you shared all of this wisdom, this insight about connection. I feel like we could talk forever, but we'll bring you back. We'll bring you back. So thank you, Adam, so much.
Thank you, Erin. And can't wait to come back. But regardless, it was a blast.
Yes, that was the intention. That was the intention. Okay, Workday Playdate fam. My mind is buzzing in the best way. I mean, 90,000 hours at work, like that's too much time to feel disconnected. And after this convo with Adam, I hope you feel inspired to do something about it. So here's your homework. And yes, I'm giving you homework. It's fun, I promise. I want you to find one person at work, just one, who you can connect with on a deeper level this week. Now, maybe it's a real conversation over coffee instead of small talk, or maybe it's giving someone a genuine compliment. I want you to start small. Connection grows from there. And if you want to dive deeper, get super psyched. This book will change the way you think about connection forever, and we will link a copy of it in the show notes. So to my Workday Playdate peeps, you know what to do. Subscribe, share, and let's keep the conversation going. Hit me up on Instagram at It's Erin Deal or LinkedIn and tell me what's one way you're creating more connection this week. I'll see you next time.